show. Keeping your money safe and secure, giving you predictability. Have the retirement you deserve with our Safe Money Strategy. All the financial news you need, we're here to help you succeed on your Safe Money Show.
Good morning and welcome to Your Safe Money Show. I'm your host, Todd Schoberg. Today we have a special guest. Megan Guptill's back for her second week. She didn't run away. She came back for us. And for a refresher, Megan is a local attorney that we work with here in our office. If you missed last week's show, you can find the show on our website, yoursafemoneyshow.com. Losing a loved one is hard enough, but navigating the legal maze of probate really shouldn't be. Today we'll be discussing how to avoid probate if you need it. We'll also break down the probate process so it doesn't seem so daunting. And I want to welcome Megan this morning. So let's start off by letting our listeners who you are and what you're all about, Megan.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Todd. I'm an attorney out of Cambridge, Isani area, but I love coming up tomorrow to come visit Todd's office and see everybody here so we can talk about any of their legal issues. People have to call an attorney when bad things happen, such as a loved one passing away and not having paperwork in place, or maybe you do have paperwork in place and just need to understand what all the phrases and terms and what the forms are that you have that your loved one maybe prepared you for or didn't prepare.
Well, we're going to be a little personal today. So why did you become an attorney?
I went to law school because I wanted to be able to help people. I knew I liked reading and I knew I liked talking. And so it was recommended that being in the law is a great place to be able to help people and get to read a lot of documents and try and interpret them as well as make arguments. I think if you know anybody who likes to argue, they certainly would be great at becoming a lawyer someday. So
what's your least favorite thing about being an attorney?
I would say my least favorite thing about being an attorney is sometimes people forget and fall to their human nature of just not being diligent or not being honest with themselves and not being honest with me. When you hire an attorney, everything that you tell them is confidential. So there is legal advice that would say that your attorney has to keep your information a secret. So this listening does not create an attorney-client relationship. If you would like to hire me to be your attorney, we'd have to schedule a consultation and sign some paperwork, a representation agreement. So I hope you're listening and want to call in, but just know that listening to this does not create an attorney-client relationship, and therefore this information is not privileged or confidential.
Yeah, and anything we say on here should always be double-checked, triple-checked before you make a move, because this is not legal advice on both ends, both financially and legal. We mainly focus on probate in Minnesota. So maybe we'll start with that. What is probate, and what is probate? That's what I should say, because it's a scary word to a lot of people.
It can be scary. After a loved one passes away, they have stuff. They had assets. Maybe that's money in a bank account. Maybe it's real estate. It could be a vehicle, something with title, a four-wheeler, or their firearms. And you need to figure out how that's going to get transferred. Who owns that now? I had a client recently whose sister had passed away years and years ago, and they never probated the estate. The house was abandoned, and squatters started living there, and the city started sending nuisance warnings saying, well, you are the heirs of this house. Who owns this house? The legal owner has passed away and the siblings never probated the estate because as we looked at the bills that would have to be paid for medical care, it wasn't going to be worth it economically in the end. But in order to figure that out, what types of bills are there, the notices that had to go to the state, the heirs of your estate, of a loved one, have to transfer the assets and pay the bills. Also making sure the state of Minnesota gets their money, or if there's maybe county taxes for the real estate. But ultimately the hope and the goal would be that you are leaving something for your heirs so that they can remember you by, whether it's a sentimental personal item, or just the finances of their money in some type of retirement account that Todd can help you with. But probating is a court process in order to transfer the assets that were once owned by somebody who is now deceased.
That's a lot. So maybe we should break that down and let's follow that process maybe step by step. So let's break down and go through that. So the first step, I think, is opening the case. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Absolutely. So there's going to be two different options that you'll have to decide when you are picking what type of probate. So it's either going to be formal or informal. So maybe there's a will and the will says who is going to be responsible for filling out that paperwork. And whoever is deemed responsible for filling out that paperwork, whether that's in a will or someone who just takes on that responsibility, they have to list the birthday, the death day, any heirs. So that's going to be children, siblings, and naming the heirs. Those are the potential beneficiaries, which is somebody who just receives. The beneficiary is the person who receives. They might be an heir, either biologically or named in the will. Maybe they're just a family friend or a next-door neighbor who had a close relationship. Well, maybe it's a charity of some kind. They would be a beneficiary. It's not necessarily always a human that's a beneficiary. You can name a pet, for example. If you have a really close relationship with a dog or a cat, you can actually name them as your beneficiary and also name somebody to be responsible for taking care of them and making sure that the assets that you have go to take care of that animal or that charity or that person. So the probate process to start, pick whether it's going to be formal or informal. Formal is going to take a little bit longer, but is necessary if there's concerns that it may be contested. Someone might argue with who should get what amount. Or if it's going to be informal, filling out paperwork, filing it with the court, attending court hearing, and then we can jump to the end. It'll be wrapped up with paying off the debts and then distributing any of the leftover assets.
You said supervised or not supervised. Is that what that was?
Formal and informal.
Formal and formal. Years and years ago, my mother-in-law died. She died very young, but she had three kids, and we had to go to court. And I just, I don't know how the question came up, but it was kind of like, is there anybody in the state or the beneficiaries that might contest any of this? I says, my brother-in-law contests everything. Well, I said it loud enough for the judge to hear it, and he went under what he called, I want this supervised. But you said informal or formal, so that I think that's what he meant, right? Because we didn't have to go back to court or anything. We listed all the things and who it went to, and the attorney that was running or helping us with that turned that in, and it all went fine. But I found out, never joke in front of a judge.
Well, there's a lot of sense of humor. This is Pat Dunkin'.
Oh, well, now that the case is open, the next step is notifying parties in inventory.
Right. You also have to notify the creditor. So if anyone comes forward, maybe it's a bank account, a credit card, for example, maybe there was a judgment against the person. They didn't pay someone who sued them in small claims court, or there's a hospital bill. That's also very common. So you also do the notice to creditors and do an inventory and keep all of the records for any type of expenses that have to get paid while you're wrapping up the case, maybe paying the mortgage, paying the insurance. Sometimes we see if a house takes a little bit longer to sell, maybe there has to be snow removal or you have to do some landscaping while the house is being pended to decide, is someone going to live there? Is it going to be rented or is it going to be sold? And the proceeds split up amongst the heirs.
So with that being said, do you have to open up a special account for that?
Yes, you do, and you'll get some paperwork You have to get a death certificate. We recommend getting a couple. Do have to pay for them. However, the expenses do come out of the estate. So you're not having to take it out of your own paycheck. You're not having to, take out a loan or anything. So you do get compensated from the estate, assuming there's a net positive balance. If there were even net negative, then that might be something to discuss. But they do have to have a bunch of paperwork to prove that you have the authority in order to wrap everything up.
Just a note, I know I tell my clients to get a minimum of 8. The reason is that you can never have too many, but you could have 2 less. And your first one is a large charge. And the next ones, and it depends on what county you're in, can be substantially less. I think the last time I did it, the original was 23, and I think each copy was 6. And that's been a few years, so that's probably gone up just like everything else. But make sure you have enough of those certificates. All right. However, not all assets need to pass through the court, right? Generally, only assets solely owned by the deceased go through the probate. The following is going to bypass the process. We can both talk about this because this is something I do a lot of. Assets that have named beneficiaries, life insurance accounts, retirement accounts, or bank accounts. These are just to name a few. But I'm not real clear on jointly owned properties. Can you give us a little background on that?
So you might own a property jointly with a spouse, for example. When you're doing your estate plan, you can cut out a child. If you don't want your child to receive anything, you can write them out of your will. If you don't have a good relationship with a child, they don't have to receive anything. It's not entitlement. It's a gift. If you want to write your spouse out, though, that's a divorce. You can't write your spouse out in estate planning and say, I don't want my spouse to receive anything. You're legally married. Unless you get divorced, you can't write your spouse out in an estate plan. So you might own property with a spouse. Another common owning jointly, though, would be with siblings. Let's say you and your siblings received an asset, whether that be a house or an account of some kind. And you had to own it with your siblings, you jointly are sharing in that responsibility, in those expenses, in any decision about whether to sell that property or rent it or who gets to live there. So you might own something also with your siblings, and that's, or maybe not someone who you're related to at all. Maybe you and a friend wanted to go in and buy a business together or buy an asset together. And you have to decide whether or not your interest in that asset transfers to your heirs or transfers to the other owner.
That's a big one. A lot of times that's where we end up with arguments between the family because we get dad said this or mom said this, and this is what was supposed to be happened. They made no decisions. It's in probate. Now what happens? That can be tied up both all the assets or the business or the property. And then you have what's called an argument. I don't know if I ever told you this, Megan. I had 2 brothers and a family come in one time years ago, and the 2 brothers got so mad at each other that they both stormed off, and they didn't talk to each other. They didn't communicate. And about 8 years later, I'd seen them at a funeral. And one came over at a time, and we started talking. And I said, you remember when you and your brother got mad at each other? Did you guys ever get back together? He says, no, we haven't. And a matter of fact, we talked to his wife, and he can't even remember what we were arguing about. And be honest with you, I can't even remember what we were arguing about. That doesn't need to happen. And this, we're going to talk about a plan. You have to have a comprehensive estate plan. And that's involving me. It's involving your financial person. It's talking about an attorney. It's getting the right documents down. And I really tell you this for one reason only, is because I don't want those types of things to happen to your family. And if you need to get a hold of me, I'm at 855-22-MONEY. That's my phone number, 855-226-6639. Or you can go to our website at yoursafemoneyshow.com. You can send me a smoke signal. You can walk down Main Street. I'm at 139 South Union Street. But make sure you're getting a hold of me. And Megan, how can they get a hold of you?
I am happy to take phone calls or email. My phone number is 763-350-3092. You can also text that number during business hours or go to my website. It's Guptill, which is my last name, Guptill, attorney.com. You don't have to hire me as your attorney, but I highly recommend you talk to an attorney because having a plan in writing is very important to avoid having arguments. I mean, I practice in a couple different areas of law. I do family law as well and divorces, or I'll help landlords with tenants who aren't paying. And all areas of law can be very stressful for people and very emotional and very difficult. But I think one of the harder things is doing estate planning and a probate where things weren't clear and when there wasn't a plan in writing with directions to explain what the wishes were of the late family member so that we can avoid those arguments, because people are already so emotional after a loss and after death that they're grieving. And then things get messy with the money and the assets and who was supposed to get what for a personal property and what the plan was if it's not in writing.
And I think the next few minutes, I think I'd like you to sit back and listen, because I do have some questions and maybe you're going to answer them if I just ask the right question. Trusts. What does a trust do? How does it work? What does it protect? And do you need a will with a trust, or is it part of it? I think I'm just going to let you free flow with this, and you can take as much time as you want, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions on what kind of trust there are and what a trust actually does.
There are a lot of misconceptions. It's like a whole nother language. It's like you're trying to speak German or Spanish without ever taking a class on it. We hear phrases all the time in common conversation, but they're often misused. So to answer one question, yes, you having a trust is a benefit because it is a creature. It's almost like a company that it owns property. It can be if you transfer with a deed your property, whether it's real estate, into the trust. It can avoid tax consequences. It can avoid probate. But there's different kinds of trusts. For example, a special needs trust, which would be something that you might have in order to take care of a loved one who would be receiving some type of Social Security or disability so that they don't become ineligible for the benefits that they're receiving through the state because of their disability from having their inheritance from their trust, for example. Sometimes we'll do a cabin trust, for example, that's just to take care of who's going to be able to enjoy spending time at the family cabin. So a will is going to also be accompanying a trust, because a will is your wishes. A will is important to have, but it doesn't do all of the significant transfers that the trust can do. For example, you might have a will and still need to probate the estate, whereas with a trust, you can likely avoid probate as long as all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and the beneficiary is listed and named in the trust to have everything clear and in writing so that you can have your assets transfer to the people who you want to have benefit from your hard work of your life and not have to have financial consequences of any medical bills, for example, and the state taking any of what it is yours and therefore becomes your heirs.
Then we have something that's called, you do call it that, a living trust. And with that being said, do you ever have to make changes or updates, or once you have a trust, it's done? Maybe you have an attorney do the trust. Is there something you have to do?
You do have to have a certificate of trust. You can make changes to the trust. Sometimes we'll see Maybe a daughter gets married and her last name changes. That does not affect the legality of the trust just because you named your daughter with her maiden name and then she gets married. That's okay. But thinking about family law and divorce, a nice thing about your inheritance and a trust is it's non-marital. So if you pass away and your child receives their inheritance and then they get divorced, if it was part of their inheritance, their soon-to-be ex-spouse isn't going to be able to try and get their fingers in that part of the pie, thankfully. So as long as your estate plan is done well. So it would be certainly a benefit to make sure that you cross your T's and dot your I's and double check if anything has changed from when you originally created your documents. Maybe you own property or owned a boat or a car and named that to go to someone specifically, and then you sold it. If you gift someone your vehicle or trailer or boat in your will, you're still allowed to sell it. It's not an obligation. This isn't a contract. The person who's receiving it doesn't have to consent or sign off on it. So you are allowed to sell items, even if you name them in your will and your trust and your estate plan. You're not obligated to continue to own those items so that your beneficiary can receive them. You're still allowed to sell them for me, but the risk comes you buy something new after you've done this paperwork and didn't specifically list who's supposed to receive that. That's where the arguments and the fights can unfortunately happen.
Now, I get a lot of people that are snowbirds and they go down south and they want a free meal once in a while, so they go to an attorney's dinner and they put on this wonderful spread and they ask these people, they say, you should have a trust. Come to our meeting. Make an appointment with me. Let's talk about having a trust. And they come back and they say, Todd, look what I did. I got a trust. Can you talk about funding a trust and how that handles and what that, what does it do? What is funding a trust really all about?
Funding a trust would be about transferring your assets into the trust. Kind of like, again, a business might own things. You might fund a business. You fund a trust by transferring those assets into the trust. With the paperwork and the dinner specials from big, expensive, fancy attorney law offices, when you're paying that, you're paying for the secretaries and for that meal. You might think it's a free meal, but really they're overcharging everybody in order to pay for the rental of that location. I like to not have a free meal because I can pay it past the savings off to the client. But something else to mention, as you mentioned, snowbirds and your domicile, which is sounds like a weird word. Domicile, what does that mean? You might live in the state of Minnesota or live in a specific state, but then you travel often and frequently outside to, warmer state, for example, where you would need to have your paperwork would be the state that you are domiciled in, meaning where you plan to return to. Sometimes we call it the teddy bear test. Where do you keep your teddy bear? And it's not just going to be, 6 months and a day. Sometimes people think they need half a year plus a day to be considered to be domiciled on that state. It's not just where you get your mail, but there can be factors that we'll look at. And that's going to be affecting where your probate happens and what contingencies you can put on your estate plan or your trust for your beneficiaries to receive from your trust, because some states have different rules or what types of contingencies you can put in your estate plan for your heirs to be able to receive any asset from your trust.
I've also found that I've heard, I've not done it myself, but people that own property, say here and in Florida, Arizona, whatever, you really need to know their probate laws, because I've had people that have had to probate their estates in both states. So you need to know that, and you get the help from your attorney that will do that. What's a trustee?
That's a great question. Trustee is going to be the person. So you can have a personal representative in your will. You can have a power of attorney from your power of attorney. You can have your healthcare directive, and those might all be the same person. They could be different people. It's recommended that it be someone you trust. Trustee, hence the word. They have duties. They have responsibilities. They cannot misspend. They cannot have any use of the money. Or be taking it for their own personal gain. If it's going to be open for a lot longer of a duration of time, such as if there's a requirement that the child, you know, reach a certain level of education or reach a certain age, that money should also be potentially invested so that it's not losing to inflation. But there are interesting court cases where there was misspending of the funds or it wasn't properly managed, and that person can get sued because they are taking on a duty and a responsibility to take care of the trust to make sure that nothing is misspent and not used for their own personal gain.
Yeah, I had one client that had a trustee just to take care of their affairs. And she was paying all the bills, and she happened to misspend some of that money, and she happened to get 5 years in jail for that type of work. So I would say, look at your trustee, make sure you trust them. I always had the saying, if you trust your children, you might not need a trust. If you don't trust anybody, you better have a trust. So that's it. The other one is, people come in and say, well, I want an irrevocable trust. Can you give us a little bit of the pros and cons, what that is? I've talked about it with some of the inner stuff, but maybe from your viewpoint.
So we can have different kinds of trust, as we discussed. So the important thing to think about is, what, if anything, is going to, it cannot be changed or canceled or amended without court permission or the beneficiary's permission. So it's important to have the trust in order to avoid taxes, protecting your wealth from any lawsuits or any medical expenses that might come up at the end of life. But once the assets are transferred, then the grantor, that's the person who made the trust, gives up legal ownership or authority, and they have to have a permission or approval for any changes to happen.
So, one last question on trust for me is, then I have people come in with checkbooks and they're writing a check, maybe into an annuity or an investment. And on that check, it says the trust of so-and-so. I've also seen titles of houses that have come in and taxes that says the trust of so-and-so. Is that what we consider the funding of the trust, that you actually have to have those made? Or is that just assumed if it's not on the document?
It cannot be assumed if it's not on the document. If your real estate is owned by the trust, you still have to pay the taxes. You still pay the mortgage. You still have to do the maintenance. And you still get to live there. If the property is owned in the trust, and there's some extra paperwork for if you were to sell that house that you have to fill out, because you are, as the trustee, in order to sell the home, if it's owned by the trust, but you do have to have a deed recorded. If it's not recorded, it'll have a sticker on the top. There's a $46 filing fee and $1.65 for the tax. It is generally, typically, most often.
There's always a fee in there. There's always.
Right, and there's always the caveat, but it does depend. Sometimes maybe it's a little more, it's a little less, depending on county. But it does have to be recorded. But you can own your house or have your annuity owned by your trust, and you still have access to it. It just protects it from taxes and avoiding probate.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of information. I hope you guys all understand everything we said. If you do have more questions, you know you can always contact my office, or you can contact Megan at her number, which is, I'll have you give it again, Megan.
763-350-3092, or feel free to call Pod's office and they'll get a hold of me also.
So if you have any questions, pick up the phone, give us a call. Like I said, we've covered a lot about probate and trusts and wills, and it's always complicated. And if you have any more questions, or you'd like to set up an appointment with Megan or me, my number is 855-226-6639. That's 855-22-MONEY. Or Megan, I'm going to have you give it one more time.
763-350-3092. Look forward to hearing from you.
Megan, I really want to thank you for putting up with me and going through this and giving our listeners a lot of information. And now they have another resource to call and contact. And if you're looking for a comprehensive retirement plan or concerned about your future retirement, give me a call or go to my website at yoursafemoneyshow.com, where you can find all my educational booklets, or just stop by my office at 139 Union Street in downtown Mora. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Remember, if I can't prove it, don't do it, and have a wonderful weekend.
We're here to help you succeed on Your Safe Money Show.
Your Safe Money Show is brought to you by Schobert and Holmstrom Financial Services in Mora, Minnesota. The agency is an independently owned and operated and is not affiliated with any other Safe Money or government agency. Call the office at 855-22-MONEY, 855-226-6639 for your no-obligation appointment, or visit yoursafemoneyshow.com.